Hi there, welcome to another podcast from Andy Poulton, your Chief SEO Officer. Have a listen, I hope you find it useful. Hi, welcome to my latest podcast. This time we're doing something a little bit different. I'm joined in the studio by Andy Entwistle from Salient Sales and Training, and we're going to be talking about sales. And in particular, we're going to be talking about ethical sales and why you might want to choose ethical sales as a way of meeting your sales targets or exceeding your sales targets. There'll be some off-topic conversations along the way as well, but have a listen. Hope you find something interesting. Andy, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Andy. Pleasure to be here.
So you don't get confused, Andy 1 and Andy 2. It's going to keep you on your toes. Andy, what is ethical selling?
Ethical selling is, some people call it relationship selling, whereby you build good business relationship in a friendly but professional way, as opposed to those who would rather stab a customer in the back to get the order, those who would put a knife against your throat to be able to achieve that winning business. The short-term stuff that a lot of people do go for, as opposed to the long-term, which means if you have made a friend, made a professional friend, as it were, in the customer's base, then you can go back and they will probably want some more from you. And if you have an issue, they'll probably support you in that as well.
So it's more than just the one-off.
Absolutely, yes. I'm very lucky because I made some good friends throughout my sales career, and I have one chap who still gives me referrals after about 30 years, which is really good.
That's excellent. You kind of really took me into my next question, really, which is actually, how did you get into ethical sales? What is your background?
Well, originally, I was a physicist. I have a degree in physics from Sheffield. I thoroughly enjoyed everything to do with physics, but as many of us did in that period, we're talking about the mid-80s, and there weren't many really good jobs in physics, unless you were absolutely Oxbridge, double first or whatever like that, and I'm afraid I wasn't quite that good. But I had got this degree, and I think, as most of us did in those days, I went into electronics, and I was designing and building thick film hybrid microcircuits for a few years before I realised that that's not really what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So when they said, do you want to be an applications engineer? I said, yes. What is it? And apparently it was technical support to the sales team. Now, the sales team were a lively bunch. So I was riding shotgun with these guys all around the country, not having to do a great deal because they didn't know how much I should know or how little I should know. Having a great time. And it came to the point, I was expecting it really, when they said, well, do you want to be technical sales? No. Sales, you know, slimy people, you know, bad reputation even in those days. So they said, you want a car? Yes. And the rest is history, really. I went on the road and technical sales for best part of 20 years. Sales management, and got to the point where I'd really had enough fighting the pressure sales that had been going on for years. The number of rows I got into with sales directors, proving them wrong at every turn. And anyway, I was quite successful, but I decided it's time that I really taught people the right way, if you like. I suddenly had this vision and mission in mind, and I formed Salient in 2007. And ever since then, life's been a ball. Every day's different. I've trained well over 200 people now in ethical selling and thoroughly enjoying it.
So where did you learn about ethical selling? How did it come, or was it something that came to you naturally?
Well, the latter, really. I would be told to go and get an order at whatever cost. Luckily, I wasn't told, like a colleague of mine, if I didn't win the order, don't bother coming back, that sort of pressure. But it was something that was totally alien to me. I like making friends. I liked enjoying people's company and going back again to meet them again. And it proved very successful. So I kept on doing it. If I may, I do remember the time when our MD came into the open plan sales office and he said, right, there's a hole in production in 2 months' time. Fill it. That was the way he spoke, really. Unfortunately, the gestation period for electronic circuitry was about 6 months minimum. And so they were panicking. They couldn't go to anybody. They were expecting to find some new business in 2 months. And they couldn't. I just phoned up my friend Gary and said, you've got some stuff coming out in about 4 months' time. Could you possibly bring it forward a couple of months? And he said, yes, no problem with that. I filled the gap, told the MD. His jaw dropped. He did not understand what I'd done or how I'd done it.
Yeah, I must admit, it's very much been my approach, particularly when I was involved in recruiting people, that I made sure that I would recruit people who would, from a slightly different approach, fit into a team, because I knew that I could coach them with selling, but I couldn't coach them in how to be a team player. or I was frequently contacted by a colleague who would joyously tell me that their performance figures were going to skyrocket because they've just recruited the best salesman ever. But the best salesman ever would never last because he'd alienate the rest of the team. And he wouldn't do the retail essentials of keeping products ticketed, keeping displays clean, keeping displays full, because all he was out for was the next pound. And it's a slightly sideways look at what you do, but it's also about that approach to sales, about satisfying the customer's demand. And I used to tell people that what we wanted people to do was people to leave the shop saying, look what I've bought, not look what I've been sold.
Yeah, but this is the benefit of keeping good business relationships, good ethical relationships, and not doing the pressure selling. I always use the Dale Carnegie triangle, which shows the 3 points as being knowledge, skills and attitude. And the emphasis is always on attitude. If you have the right attitude to sell, you will be successful in sales. Mm-hmm. And that right attitude is to make those business relationships mm-hmm. and to foster those relationships and treat people with respect. If you do that, they'll come back for more.
So what does a typical Andy Entwistle day look like, if there is such a thing as a typical Andy Entwistle day?
Typically 24 hours long. Now that usually is it, but Yes, the day starts, as I've always been told by my friend Andy Poulton, with some social media stuff. I get on there and I see who's looked at what. And sorry, Andy, is that an issue? And I follow that with catching up on various emails and what have you. Then it's a case of looking at the plan I made yesterday for today and start ticking off the list, which could be anything from contacting former customers or redesigning an old product. I had an old course that I'd been running to make it more up to date. I'm always tweaking. I'm an inveterate tweaker. And I really do enjoy writing and producing these courses, and nearly as much as I enjoy presenting them and seeing the difference.
I'm really glad you enjoyed you added presenting at the end there, because I was getting a bit worried.
Yes. Oh, presenting is great. I mean, you and I are old performers, let's be honest, and no, less of the old, but yes, we're performers and we do like getting our message across in a fun but in really important way. Mm-hmm. So that people understand where we're coming from. And if they understand it, they will use it. If they use it, they will be successful.
Nice chain linking there.
Thank you.
Looking at it from the other side of the coin, what does a typical or what would a good client look like for you?
That's a good but difficult question. Because when I first decided I was going to train ethical selling, I started to have a look at what else was out there, and I went through various different types of courses, and most of them were based around one or two ideas and just extrapolated and extended and broadened. And I thought, well, that's not very good value. I didn't go into too much detail that I might find myself using some of their ideas, because I'd been doing this for nearly 20 years and I'd proved my version was successful. And basically what I did was I made it as simple as possible. Basically planning, finding customers, making a pitch, negotiation when needed, close the deal, and then look after them. And that's it. That can be applied to any market and any business. Therefore, I teach, coach, train, however, whatever you like to call it, anybody from a one person right up to the corporate. So to ask what's a typical customer of mine, I have very distant ends of the scale. I'll be teaching someone who's just started in his shed, as it were, how to promote, how to sell, how to keep your customers. And the next day I might be with some large corporate training 10 of them how to do technical sales over a 5-day program. I enjoy both very, very much.
Okay. So you don't then, what you're saying is you don't have a typical customer.
What I look for, you're making a good point here, because what do I look for? I look for people who are open to be able to change what they're doing. Okay. I'm looking for people who want to sell more and accept that if you have the greatest promotion, the greatest marketing, the greatest SEO, if you don't mind me saying, mm-hmm. in the world, you still need sales skills. Mm-hmm. I refer to it as the field of dreams approach. If you build it, they will come. People will build the most magnificent website. It looks absolutely fantastic. But then they sit back and wait for them to come and expect the business to happen. It's not like that. People still need to have everything explained to them. They need to make it personal. Or you need to make it personal if you want to sell to them repeatedly. And they need to be able to see that what you're providing them is good value to them. It's what they need, but also what will make a big difference to them too.
Okay. How does a client identify that they need an ethical sales expert?
I'd like to think that they see this on the website. They might do a search for such a thing and come up with my good self. However, more often than not, it's a case of the smaller businesses are definitely looking for ethical, and they will meet up with me at networking or hear of me. I get referrals and so on. The larger companies tend to find me under the search technical sales training, which is my flagship course, the one that where they find me. Actually, it's a poorly kept secret that if you search for technical sales training, I will be on page one.
Well done.
But now I've told everybody, they'll catch on.
So you've been doing it for over 16 years.
Indeed.
In that time, or in fact, even going back, are there any funny or embarrassing incidents that you can talk about without getting sued?
Don't mention Sue. I thought about this on the way here, and every story I came up with probably isn't suitable for broadcast. I'm not saying that it's at all corrupt or rude or anything like that, but it's more in terms of, I'm going to dig myself a hole here now. The things I've said, things I've done that were inadvertent and rather inappropriate at that moment. Can we leave it at that?
Welcome to the crowd.
Yes.
Moving a little bit on from there in that case, whereabouts are you based and what areas do you cover?
I have an office in Royal Wood and Bassett. I could be training the person in the same building because, as you know, it's a mixed office. But I have trained people. I've been over to Munich to train some people from Samsung. I've trained in Bordeaux. I've had people come over from Holland. I've even trained in Harrogate. So it's been quite an experience, I can tell you.
So geography is no issue then?
Not at all. I'll have easel, will travel.
Moving away from Andy Entwistle, the ethical sales expert, what do you do in your spare time? Do you have spare time?
Spare time. I have a wife, four daughters. But in all fairness, yes, I am a member of the Wessex Male Choir, and we're regularly getting together, exercising our throats and then lubricating them to keep them thoroughly in order. But we have great fun. We had a concert in Cirencester last weekend. We're off to Paddington in November, Paddington Station, where we will be singing for the GWR for their remembrance service, which is always very moving.
Wow, that's very good.
Well, a lot of soldiers from Swindon area or all around the country would end up on Paddington Station to get the trains that will take them over to France in the First World War. So there are some memorials there, and we sing by those, and lots of wreaths and poppies are released at that stage. It is a very moving service.
I would imagine so. And other than your stuff with the choir, what sort of music do you listen to in your spare time? Or in your time when you have a few minutes, let's change that.
quite an eclectic mix, although I will admit that due to the era in which I was brought up, I would suggest that prog rock is the favourite. Rock of various sorts, but folk, I love good folk music, especially live folk music. Some jazz.
Okay.
Although it only takes about half an hour for me to want something else a bit more umphy, shall we say. And classical. I'm learning a lot more about classical than I used to, Tchaikovsky being my favourite on that score.
Very good. It's quite interesting. I listen to a podcast called The Raconteurs that has Guy Pratt, who's a bass player, session bass player, played with lots of stars, played on loads and loads of hit records, but is currently, or used to be, the bass player for Pink Floyd once Roger Waters left. And Gary Kemp, guitarist and songwriter from Spandau Ballet. And it's incredible the diverse range of people they interview. But without them engineering it, the word prog always seems to enter the conversation.
And yet it was such a derided type of music.
No, it was only derided by the punks.
Fair enough. Well, it hasn't come out of its shell, though.
Not
as much as it was so mainstream.
Yeah, but I think that's simply because there's been this massive explosion in artists and how easy it is to get a song played somewhere these days. You know, you can record a song in your bedroom, and there are a number of acts who have gotten well known by recording songs in their bedroom, sharing it to YouTube, becoming YouTube famous and being picked up by record companies. And then you've got the likes of Spotify they've got very deep wells of need to fill their coffers of their song trove, if you like. That maybe genres as a particular type is almost a dying trend across the board.
Hmm. I do confess that when I look through YouTube, what's on there, and I see this child prodigy mixing together some amazing piece of music that any record producer from the 70s would die for, I don't pick up the bass guitar and have a play with that, because I'm thinking, why? They're so good. It's amazing.
Yeah. Pre-COVID, I became aware of a young lady called Nandi Bushell, who was a drummer and a huge personality. I think she was about 9 at the time. She rose to fame because she challenged Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters to a drum-off, having played, I think, a Foo Fighters song and shared it with him. And he took her up on the drum-off, and it was incredible. And then, because Dave Grohl is probably the nicest guy in rock, he flew her to the States, and she appeared as a special guest on a Foo Fighters gig, and everybody in the audience knew who she was.
I must look that up.
She was then also, if you go back to the Queen's Platinum Jubilee, there was some drumming that took place around the monument in front of Buckingham Palace. Nandi Bushell was leading the drumming for that.
I may have seen her.
And she is genuinely a drumming prodigy, but she has such an amazing personality too. But that's the power of YouTube.
Yes, and music.
And social media.
Big influence in my life, music, definitely.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It's been since I could learn to put a record on a record player, I think, which was many, many years ago, seeing as my dad used to work for a company that made record players. So we've touched on music, we've touched on where you're based. Do you have a favourite gadget?
Oh, goodness.
Doesn't matter if you don't. I mean, I'm a techie, I'm a geek. I love my toys. A visit to my office would quickly reveal that I love my toys.
Yes. Just sitting here looking around, I can see about 37 of them at the point one go. The gadgets, I'm not sure gadget is the right word, but the most, want a better word, played with piece of equipment that I have is my receiver, tuner amplifier, if you like, okay. Part of my hi-fi. I managed to get hold of a 1978 Top Flight Trio KR9600 or whatever it is. Tuner amplifier, 150 watts a channel, and it's got all the bells and whistles on it, the knobs and dials and the switches, and I just love setting up the sound perfectly.
Oh, very nice.
And especially if there's something coming through on classical FM or something like that, in which case I'll turn it up and get the full effect. And marvellous, marvellous.
Have you got any neighbours close by?
Yes, but he is a landscape gardener, always making noises himself,
Okay. So
he can't grumble.
Yeah, I've got neighbours. No, one of them came round at 3 o'clock in the morning the other day. 3 o'clock in the morning! It's a good job I was still up practising my drums.
Bumch, as they say.
So we've talked about things that you like. What really gets your goat?
Oh, absolutely nothing, Andy. I'm so laid back. You don't believe a word, do you?
No, I don't. No.
Yes, I confess we do occasionally have a mutual grunt, don't we? But I think it's various approaches by different people in the media, whether they're politicians or anybody else, where arrogance and deceit come to play. I have to stop myself from throwing ping pong balls at the television or radio, whatever I'm listening to.
TVs are very easily damaged. If somebody listening to this decides that they want to know more about ethical selling and Andy Entwistle's approach to ethical selling and ethical sales training, how can they get in touch with you?
They can call me on my mobile, which is 07941 041 364. And I'm always open for a chat. Now, if I'm busy, I will get back to you. I do promise that. Or they can go on my website, have a look at that, which is www.salientsales.co.uk. They can buy the book, The Persuasive Power of Ethical Selling, by me, Andy Entwistle. It's available from all good Amazons and myself.
I was just about to talk about the book, seeing as it's there, sat in the middle of the table, waiting. I was hoping that would come into play. Is there anything that you can think of that perhaps I should have asked you and I haven't?
You've covered really very many things that I am interested in or involved in, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Excellent stuff. Andy Entwistle from Salient Sales and Training, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Andy. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
You've just been listening to a podcast by Andy Poulton, your Chief SEO Officer. You can reach me on 01793 23 80 20 or hunt me down on social media, Twitter and LinkedIn. Just search Andy Poulton. Thanks for listening.